I really just want to put my head down and stay focused and get better every day. I don't think that there is, you know, as I said, one phase that I need to overtrain in. I need to work on the basics every day, on every horse that I ride. And, you know, I think the World Championships was a great experience. But my goal would be in the future to help Canada win medals. You know, I think we finished the team, which we haven't done in a while. That's really exciting for Canada. We have a great new high performance committee, but I think for me, instead of thinking, you know, Paris 2024 is a long way away and it's easy to get caught up worrying about what everybody else is doing to get there. And I just want to ride a little bit better every day and pick different things at different competitions that I want to focus on and work on one thing at a time to have it all peak when it matters.
There is a depth and a breadth to our lives that largely goes unexplored. As an equestrian life mindset coach and host of this podcast, I am here to lead you on that exploration. Deep conversations covering topics in and out of the show ring with industry leaders and unsung heroes alike, sharing their stories and what makes their journey unique, but relatable at the same time. We all have stories to share and lessons to trade. Something we've learned from a horse or from each other. So relax and be ready to listen with more than just your ears. I'm Tracy Mitchell. Welcome to Hitting Your Stride. Welcome back to Hitting Your Stride, and I hope that 2023 is going great for you so far. In our first episode of the new year, I have with me today Holly Jacks, who has been quietly making a name for herself in the eventing world for the better part of the last two decades. A native of British Columbia, Holly moved to Ontario to take a working student position with Penny Rowland. What was supposed to be just a six-month position turned into a five-year stay. In 2006, she began her own business and has steadily been climbing the competition ladder since. Being longlisted for the Pan Am Games in 2015 was followed by being shortlisted for the 2016 Olympics in Rio. And just last year, Holly and her mount, Candy King, took part in the 2022 World Championships with Team Canada in Italy, something she's using as a springboard to take a run at the national team when they head to the Olympics in Paris, France, in 2024. A summer job that found her starting thoroughbreds evolved into her discovering how much she loved to jump and go fast. Holly's specialty now is retraining racehorses for competitive riding careers when their racing days are over. And she shares with us how much she gets out of coaching her students and helping them work towards their goals. So without further ado, let's hit our stride with Holly Jacks. All right. Well, thank you, Holly, for joining me here on Hitting Your Stride. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. How are things down in the sunny south?
Beautiful and warm, and yeah, we're a happy crew.
Awesome. And your winter season is just getting started, I'm guessing, right?
It is. Yeah, I'm actually heading to our first horse trials this weekend.
Awesome. Well, that's good to hear. I hope you do well. Awesome. So can you, let's get started. Can you tell the listeners about your backstory? Where did your passion for horses come from? And what was the turning point for you when you knew riding was going to be your future?
So for me, I always loved horses ever since I was a little girl. My parents owned a farm, but weren't horsey, but the gentleman that leased my parents' farm bred thoroughbreds for racing at Hastings Park in Vancouver, British Columbia. And he also took out trail rides. So I spent my teenage years taking out dude rides for him. So that was my summer job. And I broke all his thoroughbreds at the farm with him when I was way too young to be breaking babies before he sent them down to Hastings Park.
Okay. So how did your parents adjust to this newfound passion of yours when it wasn't technically in your genes?
They were always like really supportive of letting me do whatever I wanted to do as long as I worked hard at it. And I think that they definitely made me try different sports and, you know, they put pressure on me to be academic. But at the end of the day, like from day one, I knew all I wanted to do was horses. I didn't care what was with like what I did with horses. To be honest, I didn't see myself moving to the East. I kind of figured I would stay on the West and I would, you know, take out trail rides and barrel race and kind of, you know, do that. And I got into eventing a little bit in the West, and I went out to do a 6-month working student position with Penny Rowland when I was 17. And I didn't go home for 5 years after that. Like, I just kind of stayed out there and got the bug. And now it's home.
Wow. Is that ever cool? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So what part of the eventing really drew you in? Why did you pick that discipline?
Definitely loved jumping as a kid. I grew up riding a lot of Western. I mostly jumped in Western saddles. I did take some formal riding lessons at some like lesson farms, but I either used some of their horses or I had a little 14 three-hand appendix quarter horse that Bill, who went to my parents' farm, had given me. And so I would like hack her down the road and get lessons from like the one or two English people that lived in Pemberton. Or when I was on the Sunshine Coast, I went to some schooling barns and got some jumping lessons. But I loved jumping. And when I realized that like this was a sport where you could jump and go fast, I loved the people. It was like a big camping trip in British Columbia. Like every event, everyone would camp their horse trailers and, you know, have dinner together. And I loved the family aspect of it. And I just got hooked.
Nice. That's awesome. You don't hear that a lot about the disciplines. So is that something that's sort of more of a thing with the eventers, do you think? I don't know.
I think for sure. I mean, I think on the West, it's actually really popular. Like all the events are at over 2 days on the West still. And a lot of the events on the East are 1 day. And so like people come from all over British Columbia and Alberta to one venue, and then they have to stay there. So they stable, they camp, and it's like a lot of camaraderie, like a lot of really good friends to this day I have from my younger years eventing in British Columbia.
Nice. Okay, that's great. All right, so you have worked with some big names in the riding industry, including Buck Davidson, Tom Dvorak, Hyde Moffitt, and Margie Gayford. How do you take what they provided for you and use it, or how did you take what they provided for you and use it to begin your own riding and training business in 2006?
So I think for me, I always chose coaches that maybe were not at the peak of their game during the time, but coaches who had ridden a lot of different types of horses. I think when you speak of all four of those coaches, they've been mounted on all different kinds of horses, and they've also made their horses from scratch. And to me, I've always brought my horses along from scratch, and it was very important that I ride with a coach who had that ability and that experience. So when I got into trouble along the way, you know, they had the tools to help me.
I really like that. Yeah. So that they give you the tools to adapt.
Correct. I mean, I think that it's a dangerous thing, especially now that you're getting a lot of young riders buying really made horses, and then all of a sudden, you know, their parents buy them an advanced horse or a Grand Prix horse, and then the next thing you know, they're a horse trainer. And I think that all four of those people that I've chosen to ride with are people that have produced multiple horses to the highest levels of their sport.
Nice. All right. And how have you put your own stamp on training new riders that differs perhaps from what you learned coming up?
I would say all four of those, maybe excluding Buck Davidson, but I do a lot of thoroughbreds. And so, I mean, Margie's had some experience with thoroughbreds, and Hyde and Tom as well, but in their sports, I mean, they're primarily like Tom is dressage and Margie and Hyde are show jumping. They don't have as many thoroughbreds. And I would say that I work a lot with off the track thoroughbreds and a lot of students that get them off the track.
Okay. And the tools that they gave you, how have you evolved them? Like as you've developed your own, you know, philosophies and training and based on your own experiences as you've come along, like, do you think that you've evolved a lot of the tools that they gave you?
And I think the basics are the basics. And that's another reason I liked those four coaches, is that they don't try to, you know, make things complicated. Horses are very black and white, you know, like there's pressure on, there's pressure off. And, you know, you need to go forward before you collect. And like, no matter if I'm riding with Buck or Tom or Margie or Hyde or training horses myself, we all have the same principles that in order to have a good ride, you have to have the horse up and ahead of your leg. They have to be, you know, bend left, bend right. go forward, go back. And I think if you can get the basics on all those horse, you know, the basics and all your horses like that, then whatever job you ask them becomes a lot easier.
You just keep it simple, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's, you know, they're just all hardworking people that nail the basics. And I try and take that into my program as well.
Oh, that's perfect. That's great. So equestrian athletes need to become good at the long game when it comes to working their way up to international level. That means you have to have patience, discipline, and dedication to get to where you want to be. How would you rate yourself in those areas when it comes to moving towards your long-term goals?
So that was an interesting one when I saw that question. And I think that people would around me would laugh when I tell you this. So I definitely have pretty bad ADHD and I've suffered from it my whole life. And I think in life, I'm a little all over the place and chaotic, but when I'm on a horse is when I am super patient and dedicated and disciplined about what I want to teach the horse that day. And it was something that I think the team at World Championships this year was surprised by. I think they felt like we had a new technical advisor this year, Matt Ryan. And by speaking on the phone, I don't think he realized that as soon as I sat on a horse, how everything for me slows down when I'm on a horse.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. And it's like my happy place and I'm calm and I can work through things. And in life, I always have to take a breath and write things down. And on a horse, I don't have to do that. Like I can learn a course really quickly. I can figure out what's underneath me really quickly. And I can react to what's going on. And so I guess that's probably a good thing with the profession I've chosen.
Yeah. Being able to think on your feet and in the saddle that quickly, I'm sure is definitely a benefit. So to follow up with that, where do you think you can do better? Is this something where you've got it all going well in the saddle and you're really happy with that? And maybe there's some of those that you wish to work on when you're not in the saddle to sort of help your overall big goal?
Yeah.
Or what do you think?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was definitely an interesting switch. I actually just started riding with Margie Gayford in my lead up to Pertoni. I'd primarily show jumped with Hyde Moffitt, and Hyde and I have very similar personalities as far as being very quick-minded and running through lots of horses. And I ran into Margie at Tryon, and I'd known her for years. I'd actually ridden with her dad a little bit when I worked for the Chesslers, and I called Hyde. I said, Margie's here. Do you think she should help me? And he said, yes. And she is so methodical and she speaks slowly. And our personalities are very different, but I really appreciate her horsemanship. And I thought it was really good for me leading into a big championship to ride with somebody who pressed me to just go to a horse show with one horse and focus on that. And not worry about what was going on at the barn, not worry about riding the young ones that day. And, you know, she said to me, this could be your only world championship. So, you know, if you spend a day with that horse, that's fine. You don't need to do 50,000 things today. And I thought she was a really great mentor leading up to such a big championship.
It's funny you use that word, because that's what I was just about to say. Like, it sounds like her mentorship offered you maybe a different perspective or something that would kind of help round you out a little bit.
Yes. I think that she's someone who, I think as of like the other coaches I put myself around, we're all very similar. We're always like, go, go, go all the time, Buck and Tom and Hyde and I. And I think Margie just really settled me, and changed my mind frame going into a big championship event. And I'm super thankful to have her in my corner now.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Does she know that you get this from working with her? Have you shared that?
I'm not sure. I don't know if we've talked about it. I mean, I definitely spoke to Hyde a fair bit about it because he was primarily coaching in the show jumping and I, you know, ran things by him and we just thought it was a really great match, her personality and my personality and Candy King's personality, because he's also quite fiery. And it was a great thing to happen this season.
Good combo. And it's also nice to know that you can have professionals within the industry doing the same thing that don't get their backs up about recognizing that someone like you could benefit from working with someone else.
Absolutely. I think that's a big thing in the industry. And I think that, when you're a good horse person, and you're confident, you don't need to worry about stuff like that. And I think you get to a level, or you try to surround yourself by people who are confident in what they do, and you can have honest conversations about things.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So on your website, it says your specialty is retraining racehorses for competitive riding careers once their racing days are done. How did you develop this niche in the industry, and what drew you to former racehorses in the first place?
So as I said, growing up, Bill Hardy rented the barn at my parents' farm, and he had racehorses, and that's where I started. And then when I went out to work for Penny Rowland, I needed to make some extra money. So I started galloping in the mornings, and I actually met my husband there, who was a racehorse trainer at Woodbine. And I galloped for a lot of people, and eventually I actually galloped more inspiration, and that's who kind of started my career as an upper level event rider.
Is that ever cool? Are you there?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. No, that's okay. Yeah, I didn't know that that's how you found more inspiration. Is that ever neat?
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So speaking of more inspiration, was your longtime partner and prime example of your work with the Off-Track Thoroughbreds. Tell us what it was like to work with Morris, and can you identify what it is that you gave each other that you needed to in order to be successful?
I think that at the time when I got him, I mean, how long ago is that now? He's 18 this year, and I got him as a four-year-old, so 14 years ago.
Aww.
And I was at a time in my career where I really wanted to be doing the upper level eventing stuff, but I was mostly making a living galloping racehorses, and I was hungry to do more. And he was a very athletic horse, and I bought him to go into my sales program, and I actually couldn't sell him and kind of got stuck with him. And I always joke about he was like the best thing I ever got stuck with. Like he failed vettings. He bucked people off. He was like not an easy horse to bring along. And I took him off the market once he'd done his first FEI and decided to keep him.
Okay. So what was it that connected the two of you? Was there one quality he had, or, you know, do you think he was bucking people off because he just wanted to stay with you?
What? No, I actually think he's actually never been like a malicious horse, but he's a really happy horse. And he was the kind of horse that would jump a jump and land and squeal and buck. And I think for me, where a lot of people would get frustrated with that behavior, like I loved to ride a horse that was just so happy to be working all the time. And it was heartbreaking when I had to retire him because he was still a sound horse who wanted to keep doing what he wanted to do, but he just loves his job, loves to be put to work. And I think I'm similar in that. Like I love to ride horses. I love to teach riding lessons. I love, you know, all the aspects of that industry. So we shared a passion for the sport.
Now, how did you just outright retire him, or did you kind of ease him into it? You know, because like, you know, when I massage horses, I've been doing that for quite a while. And seeing the horses that I've worked with for years that then enter into retirement, that's really difficult for some of them. They need to feel like they're still doing a job. Like, what were you able to do for Morris?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I retired him pretty unexpectedly at Kentucky when they found a heart murmur in the in-barn inspections. So he was like at the fit, you know, he was fit at the top of his game at the time. We were all shocked. So he was cleared to do lower level competition. So I did have a student ride him pre-training for the season. And we had to bring him in every 6 months to get rechecked. And after his original 6 month check, his heart hadn't, like it had deteriorated even more. And we decided it was best to retire him fully. So I do get on him occasionally and ride him bareback around the farm and do stuff with him because he gets bored. But yeah, unfortunately, like I was at no choice but to retire him.
Yeah. Yeah. You want him to live as long as he can with the best days he can. And that's awesome. You guys still get to kick it around. That's awesome.
For sure.
Yeah. So you and your current horse, Candy King, are in a great position heading into the new season, having represented Canada in Italy at the World Championships in 2022. Can you talk about some of the things you two are working on to prepare for this upcoming season and how that translates to you working with some of the students you teach?
Okay, cool. So, sorry, my dog. So essentially, Snickers, Sorry about that.
That's okay.
He's getting some well-deserved time off after the championships. And my plan is actually really focused on the Olympics in Paris next year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of my plan with him, is to try and get him really tuned in and ready for that. So I'm just working on filling in some gaps in his training. I'm making a plan with what he needs to do, you know, to really try and improve our performance at, hang on one sec, sorry. Guys! Sorry about that. Okay. To improve our performance from Pertoni.
Okay. And do these gaps, how would you describe those? Like, are they little things that at this point?
Yeah, just little basics. Just working on getting him stronger. I'm going to really focus on our show jumping and playing with bits a little bit cross country, getting me a little more settled. He's a great three phase horse. I wouldn't say there's one phase that we really suffer, but it was both of our first, you know, senior championship team, and just kind of going through the little points, you know, the little spots where we could get extra points with, you know, Rebecca Howard, who's our chef, and making a plan, you know, long-term.
Okay. And it's funny, you just described that he loves all three phases. Is there one that he finds just a bit more challenging, and yet does his work ethic and joy of what he does sort of help push him through?
As I said, like, he's actually really a three phase horse. I would say that, you know, the dressage, he's pretty competitive. That I think would probably be on paper, like, what he would be the best at. Cross country, he's extremely brave. The work for me is the rideability, and getting him to come back and pay attention before the fences, and then be able to be quick getting away from the fences so I can work on time. And show jumping, I think a lot of it is just getting stronger and, you know, working some gymnastics, and same idea, like building some more rideability and getting him in some bigger rings where he can settle. I think he found the ring in for Tony. It was a big grass ring with big jumps, and, you know, it was something new to him jumping at a championship like that.
Yeah, definitely. So how does your prep work for what you're doing, let's say for the games? Does that translate into your interaction with your students? Like, does it put you in a different frame of mind, or do you like inspire them? Do you know what I mean?
I would say it's funny. We have a really great group of students, and everyone's friendly and, you know, awesome. But I would say that whether you're an adult amateur that rides with me, or, you know, you're a three-star young rider, we all joke around and are very competitive. And so when I'm teaching, we always joke around, like, who had the best round and who's the winner? And like, it's kind of an ongoing joke at the barn about someone always wins the riding lesson.
Well, I have to say, in preparation for this, you know, reading up on you, et cetera, your students and what they had to say about you was enjoyable to read. So generally they all talked about how you had such a positive effect on their confidence. And a big thing was how much fun you were, which is such a compliment. And you helped them in all different areas, sort of in and out of the ring, so like aspects of personal growth. And you were very good at understanding individuals' needs. So, you know, whether you had a university student that's, you know, trying to deal with that, but still wanted to keep up with the riding, et cetera. What would you say is your biggest benefit that you bring to your students? What's one of your strongest suits that you help them with?
I think that is just like, no matter what course they have, I want to make them the best they can be. And I think a lot of people call me and say like, hey, like, I'm not sure if I'm good enough to get lessons with you. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, that's why you come for lessons. And I really enjoy teaching people that have a passion to get better at something, like are goal oriented. So whether that's like, you know, going to their very first event, and I have a girl who's a working student for me this year, who's never evented, and her goal is to do an event while she's with me. And then I have two other girls working for me, you know, one was just bronze at Young Riders and the two star, and another girl who's getting ready to do her first three star at Young Riders next year. And we just all have different goals, and anybody who wants to get better, I enjoy helping them to be the best they can be on whatever horse that they have.
Aww. Well, they can't ask for a better coach with that kind of attitude. That's awesome. That is great. All right. So you have, you have stated a goal of making it to 2024 Olympics in Paris with Candy King. I want you to look into the future and tell me what you think will happen for the two of you that will pave the way for you to be there and be successful. So what do you have to do between now and then? And I know it's, I know that's like really putting it out there, but if you think about your goals, maybe things that you need to work on, some of those filling in the gaps that he needs to do. And I guess as you approach the games and the qualifications, what do you think it is that needs to happen?
I thought about that question, and I think for me, it's like a little bit what I spoke to you about riding with Margie this year. Is I really just want to put my head down and stay focused and get better every day. I don't think that there is, you know, as I said, one phase that I need to overtrain in. I need to work on the basics every day, on every horse that I ride. And, you know, I think the World Championships was a great experience. But my goal would be in the future to help Canada win medals. You know, I think we finished the team, which we haven't done in a while. That's really exciting for Canada. We have a great new high performance committee. But I think for me, instead of thinking, you know, Paris 2024 is a long way away, and it's easy to get caught up worrying about what everybody else is doing to get there. And I just want to ride a little bit better every day and pick different things at different competitions that I want to focus on and work on one thing at a time to have it all peak when it matters.
Yeah. Yeah. And all the people that I've interviewed, you know, and sort of asking questions along this line, like, how do you prepare? And some of them have said, yep, just one day at a time, just one ride at a time. And then, you know, other people too, like, you know, asking about expectations. How do you handle expectations? Or is that word sort of like a word you don't want to deal with because it can put more pressure on you?
Yeah, I mean, I think expectations are important and goals are important. I definitely feel like you just, you know, one step at a time and then you reach your goal. I think when you have a really big expectation, it's easy to make decisions with your horse that you don't think are the right thing for your horse. Mm. And I think throughout the years, not this year, I had a really great lead up to Petone, and as I said, a really great new high performance program in Canada. I felt like we could really do what we needed for our horses to get them ready. But in previous years, getting ready to try and do things or, you know, try and qualify for the team, you sometimes are pushed to do things you don't feel like is in the best interest of you or your horse. And I really feel like what we did getting here for Petone and the support that we had, that I'm going to be able to continue to go one step at a time.
Nice.
And that's exciting. It's exciting for the country to have people around us that are letting us be the best horsemen we can be.
That's awesome. Okay. So what question that sort of popped into my brain here. What did Morris teach you with all of those experiences you had with him? What's your biggest takeaway from that relationship and everything you did with him that you've brought into with Candy King?
I mean, Morris was a way more difficult horse to bring along. So I think he truly taught me to not give up. And he truly taught me that when people told me like he was never going to be good enough, to find the people around me that believed that we were both good enough and, you know, have them in my corner and not necessarily just, you know, blow smoke and say, oh no, it's fine, you're good enough. But like, you know, give me the tools to be good enough, be hard on me when they needed to be hard on me and believe in me when they needed to believe in me. And I think that Morris, he's a horse that probably looking back with what I know now, he probably shouldn't have gone to be a five-star horse. I mean, he conformationally had not very good conformation and he was really mentally tough and a really spooky horse and a really difficult horse to handle on the ground when he was fit. But he taught me perseverance. And I think he taught me kind of to make something with what I had. And as I said, that's really what I try to bring into my program with students is like, okay, what horse do you have? What are you girls? And what can we do with this? Like, I think that in today's, situation with riding becoming so expensive and so elite, it's really easy to tell people to buy a better one. And I think that is for me one of the last resorts that I say as a coach. Like, I really want people, if they have a horse they love and they enjoy, to figure out how to reach their goals with that horse.
That's perfect. I love that. That's probably some of the best advice and philosophy I've heard. That's perfect. All right. So how do you find ways to enjoy the journey when it can be stressful a lot of the times? Do you have any mental techniques that let you differentiate between working hard and dealing with setbacks and then enjoying the success and seeing the benefits of your work? It can be such a double-edged coin sometimes.
So, I mean, I do love my job and I love to ride horses and I definitely know that's all I ever wanted. What I've really learned is that the team behind you that you have in your barn, especially, like I run a really big working student program, and the team you have in your barn as working students really makes it easier or harder to go out to the barn that morning. And I generally work 7 days a week. I mean, in the off season, I can take days off, but I think that the team behind you at the barn, at home, your vet, your farrier, your coaches, your friends, your partner, I mean, that to me is the make or break of if stress boils over, because it is stressful. And running a barn is stressful, and riding at the top levels is stressful, and money is always stressful, and horses are just really stressful. So you need to be able to have people that you can sit down with at the end of the night and you can laugh before you cry.
Yes. Wow. Yeah, that's, you know, and again, in my conversations I've had with people, a lot of them, like 9 times out of 10, will say that, yes, it's the support system. It's who we have and stuff. And yeah, all those things that you listed that can be stressful. It's definitely, at the end of the day, it's who you're sitting down and commiserating with sometimes and then celebrating with the other times.
For sure. And I think the other thing, like, people will laugh when they hear this, who are my friends, but like, I thrive off stress. So like, off season is actually when I get a little bit squirrely.
Sorry, you cut out there, Holly. Off season is what?
Is when I get a little more stressed. I get a little bit squirrely and stressed, and I'm a better person to like keep moving and having stuff to do. And even if it's, you know, if it's, whether it's riding young horses or teaching lessons or working on upper level horses, I don't do very well vacationing.
So you're not very good at taking Holly time.
Correct.
Well, if that happens to be sitting in a saddle and having a positive effect on a horse, then that's not too bad.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So lastly, I would love for you to complete this thought for me. Holly Jacks left her mark on the equestrian world by.
Ooh, I sat down with Cassandra LeBlanc, one of my young riders, last night reading this, and I said, I can't answer this question.
Really?
And I think what she said to me was, she said, Holly Jacks left her mark on the equestrian world by encouraging athletes to believe in a dream even when it feels out of reach.
There you go. And what do you think? So, I mean, that's awesome coming from your student. Is there nothing that you could think of for yourself? Because I know sometimes when you're in that situation, it's like, what do I want to think? Because you have to kind of think, sometimes it's hard to think about yourself in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think I really try to pride myself in my horsemanship, you know, and I think as a show horse rider, which are probably more people who listen to this than racehorse people, people always think about the racetrack as a bit of a taboo place and bad horsemanship and this and that. I strongly disagree. I spent a lot of time at the racetrack and I have met some of the best horsemen and women I've ever met there. And so I really tried to take a lot of stuff that I've learned down there and apply it to how I run my barn as far as taking care of my athletes, being my horses.
Yeah, love that. That's amazing. Well, good for you. And I'm so I'm happy that your student gave the input there. How did that make you feel when she said that?
It was good. It was we've had that student in particular, and I have had some big ups and big downs together. So I'm glad that you know, she feels like she has people that believe in her and that she can pick a dream, and hopefully we can help her reach it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Holly, for doing this and taking time out of your busy schedule. I really, really appreciate it.
Absolutely, for sure.
Well, good luck for the rest of the show season or the winter season, and good luck for 2024.
Thank you so much.
Hey guys, thank you for listening to this episode. Here are three takeaways from this conversation with Holly. One, find a mentor who will challenge you in the way you approach things, since stretching your boundaries is a good thing. Two, basics are just that. They're basic. Don't make things more complicated. Three, have fun. Surround yourself with like-minded people and a support system to help you navigate the tougher times and who can also celebrate the wins with you along the way. Thanks for listening, and we'll chat again soon. But until then, take care and keep your eyes fixed on where you want to be. So there you have it. I have some great interviews lined up for future episodes, and we'll be covering some pretty interesting topics, as always, with the intent to open and engage the horse world on a wide variety of issues. So until next time, keep your eyes forward and continue to hit your stride. To stay current with Hitting Your Stride, subscribe on my website or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. If you like what you've heard here today, make sure you share and leave a comment to help guide future episodes and widen the audience. And be sure to check out social media to keep up to date with Equestrian Elements Life Coaching.